This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
If you were hoping that maybe there would be an improvement in the home plate umpiring, it's only two games, but at least for the guy, I don't know who's behind the plate for the Mets game today, but he is, just made a call against former Yankee Jake Bowers. It was about, 6 inches outside? Strike three! So, yeah, let's change the uniforms. Nothing that anybody has had an issue with. Umpiring, the essence of the game, calling balls and strikes. We'll put that one down the list a little bit. And in case you were wondering, after the confrontation yesterday between Jeff McNeil and Rhys Hoskins, I'm a big believer the best revenge is living well. Rhys Hoskins is living well. Three hits today, including a home run. He has driven in four on the day. Brewers about to move. Well, maybe not about to. It's still in the eighth inning, but more than likely are about to improve to 2-0. Mets are about to drop to 0-2. And I saw a lot of reaction from the that confrontation yesterday. Well, Rhys Hoskins, he only started doing the wah-wah, which is a very underrated way to get at somebody. The wah-wah does... It's effective. But a lot of people were saying that it was... Well, he waited until he was in the safety of his own dugout to do that. Well, I think what actually happened was that McNeil just kept going on and on and on about it. So at first, Hoskins slides into second base, stays down. He allows McNeil to get out whatever he's got to get out. And then you see him, he's running off the field, and McNeil's still going on and on about it. And he Hoskins looks behind him and is like, almost at this point, like, what are you doing? Why are you still going on about it? And then he gets back to the dugout and he's staring back, and McNeil is still going on and on about it. So then, yeah, sure. It's like you're crying like a baby, so you give him the wah-wah. Very underrated zinger, the wah-wah. I think it made perfect sense. And again, at the end of the day, best revenge is living well, and safe to say, Rhys Hoskins, forget about the paternity test is in, and it turns out Rhys Hoskins is the Mets' daddy.
You are the father!
Oh, my God! That very underrated entertainment moment when Maury would be reading the DNA results. Very underrated moment. There has been many a time where I used to be like on the treadmill during that show, and it was an effective exercise. You'd stay on the treadmill for a little while longer to find out, whoa, he is not. He is. Oh, but in this case, Rhys Hoskins absolutely is the Mets' daddy, at least until the Mets actually do something. Now, they did pitch, I guess, inside. I don't think they hit him later in this game. But when the guy's already got three hits and four RBI, you got to do that right away. Get it out of the way right away the next day and tell them that... They just go about everything wrong here. But we'll see. Maybe the Mets can have a comeback today. You never know. Stranger things have happened. 7-2 Brewers as they play in the eighth inning in front of a electric Citi Field. And the fans there are just electric. They were showing during the game. Multiple, and this is SNY. You would think that SNY would be trying to show you the fans that are still into it. I saw multiple yawns. It's not this could be, again, you don't make bold proclamations off of two games. I think that the Mets could surprise, low expectations coming in. If the goal is to set the expectations low, this is a very smart approach. Two games in, and it feels like everything is kind of spiraling off its axis with the performance of Luis Severino today. The offense not exactly lighting the world on fire, which is the one thing that you would think the team should be able to do, is have a halfway decent lineup. But we'll see. It's two games. Two games is nothing. Get things turned around in no time. All right, 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. It is the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM ESPN New York. Let's talk a little football because we got the draft coming up less than a month away. Big draft for Joe Douglas. Really big draft for Joe Shane. I think that not just based on where they're picking. I think it's a bigger draft for Joe Shane than it is for Joe Douglas. But the Jets made a couple of headlines this week, the latest one yesterday. They make the trade with the Eagles for Hassan Reddick. So they deal away a conditional third-round pick for the pass rusher, guy that can get after the quarterback, double-digit sacks each of the last 4 years. Now, the third-round pick could be a second-round pick, and I guess you kind of have to hope that it is a second-round pick, right? Because if he plays 65 or 67% of the snap, something like that, and has double-digit sacks, it becomes a second-round pick. So it is absolutely a win-now move. This is the replacement for Bryce Huff, and he's a better player in the moment than Bryce Huff. He's 30 years old. He's going into a contract year, and it absolutely does fill a hole that you had there, right? You don't want the Jets taking another pass rusher in the first round, so I think that's clearly off the table. But much like we talked about a couple of, was it last week, 2 weeks ago, when they signed Smith and they signed Mike Williams, the Joe Douglas Kool-Aid Brigade is just out in force. Joe Douglas is cooking. Joe Douglas is this. He's that. Oh, he's fixing this. He's doing that. He's making all these great moves. Guys, this move, much like most of the rest of the offseason, is Joe Douglas making moves to make up for the mistakes, not of the previous GM, but to make up for the mistakes of Joe Douglas. That's what he's been doing, right? The reason why you're signing the offensive lineman you're signing is because he has not previously been able to fix the offensive line, despite multiple attempts, despite multiple tries, right? So signing Tyron Smith and signing Morgan Moses, yeah. You do that because you have to fix the mistakes of that you've made along that offensive line. Signing Mike Williams, that wasn't your first option either. You kind of hoped that you would have been able to draft that second wide receiver, either Elijah Moore or Denzel Mims or whoever. And even going back to last offseason with Aaron Rodgers, the reason why you have to make up for the mistakes of not previous regimes that your GM has had. So I just simply say to Jet fans who are all over the move, oh, Joe Douglas, the Joe Douglas Kool-Aid Brigade, because they're not drinking the Kool-Aid, they're swimming in it. Just realize the moves he's making is to make up for his own mistakes. So this the Reddick move, it's clearly to fill the hole that Huff's departure leaves open. And here's the thing. Do I like him as a player, Reddick? Yeah, clearly. He looked really good with Philadelphia. Not so much before he got to Philadelphia, but when he was in Philadelphia, he looked really good. And I would say he is the better player, or at least has been. What would worry me a little bit is, like, when I judge where quarterbacks get drafted, I look at what's surrounding. It's not just on him, it's what's surrounding and what is the situation there. And when I look at teams making trades, I look at, okay, what's the track record for this team? What's the track record for that team? And with the Eagles, I think the Eagles with Howie Roseman are kind of one of the role model organizations. They're really smart. They make really smart moves. And you'd have to say Joe Douglas has done a pretty good job of making trades, but overall, in terms of making moves, not always been the best. So this is a move that absolutely has got to work, because if it doesn't, this does not feel like a type of situation where if you move off of Joe Douglas or the coach after this season, that it's going to just simply be, hey, we'll bring in somebody else and they can get us over the top. It feels like if it doesn't work this year, it's going to be much more of a rebuilding situation. And look at that. I'm motivating the Mets. Brett Beatty with a big home run. So now the Mets trailing the Brewers 7-5. And look at that. Fire up the trumpets, because Edwin Diaz, it might be close enough to get Edwin Diaz in a game. Who would have saw that coming? So good thing for Brett Beatty there. I had to wait to see who it was, because the name on the back of the jersey is so small. I had to get the readers on to make sure I could see. What is Major League Baseball doing? What are they doing? It's amazing. They screw up things that you didn't even think were possible. But I digress. Let's get back to the Jets. So they go and they make this move, and they bring in Hassan Reddick. So now, as we kind of spin it forward towards the draft, it seems pretty clear that the draft pick at 10, or wherever the Jets end up picking, because maybe they trade down, I'm not sure, maybe they trade up, there's been some talk of that as well, it's clearly going to be an offensive player. It's clearly going to be an offensive player. In terms of the betting odds, offensive line is plus 150, tight end is plus 170, wide receiver is plus 200. So not all that much separation between those three spots. And all things being equal, here's the concern that I would have. The smart thing, it depends. It's not the position you're drafting, it's the player you're drafting, right? You don't want to just simply say, well, we got to pick this position. What if there's nobody good at that position when you're picking? Or nobody who's appropriate for whatever slot you're picking in. You don't want to just simply pick that position. But if all things are equal, the smart thing would be to draft an offensive lineman. Again, project to next year. What do you think the chances are that the Jets, who have all these problems with their offensive line, that the two tackles that they have, one's what, 32, the other one's 33, the 32-year-old guy played in 13 regular season games, misses games all the time. What do you think the chances are those two guys are going to be healthy the entire season? What are the odds of that? I'll tell you one thing. It's a whole lot higher than plus 150 for the offensive lineman. You throw a couple of bucks on FanDuel on that one. You really cash in. You'd be leaving like Bezos. You'd be Bezos' neighbor if the Jets' two starting tackles play in every single game next year. The chances of that happening are astronomical. So I would say the smart thing for the Jets to do is still to take the offensive lineman. It's a greater need than anything else. And again, you don't like to draft for need, but when you're in a win-now situation like the Jets clearly are in, need does have to come into it, especially when it's that glaring. I'm not telling you that the wide receivers on the board are not going to turn out to be good players, or the tight end is not going to turn out to be a good player, but if you don't fix the offensive line, if the offensive line is anywhere close to as big a problem next year as it's been in the past few years, nothing else is going to matter. So it's clear that that should be the area of focus. So why wouldn't it be the area of focus? It's not about the GM. It's about the shadow GM. Oh, the shadow GM. The shadow GM, we all know, has never, when in his time with the Packers, they never drafted an offensive weapon in the first round. They never drafted a wide receiver with their first round pick in the entire time that Aaron Rodgers was there. Never drafted a tight end with the first pick in the time that Aaron Rodgers was there. Never drafted a running back, which is probably the right call. I mean, you could say that, oh, they never did this. I don't know. They gave you a pretty good team around you. You were in it every single year. I think, like, the highest wide receiver drafted was Jordy Nelson, whatever, what was that, 2008, 2007, somewhere around there. So the shadow GM never got a weapon drafted in the first round. I think that does increase the chances that it could be a tight end, or it could be a wide receiver. And if that does turn out to be the case, again, it's determined by the player himself. But in terms of the need, this idea that the Jets have done enough to fix their offensive line, and now the draft is this wide open crapshoot. Absolutely not. All positions are not the same. And when it comes to the importance of building a roster and fixing all the different holes that the Jets had coming into this offseason, it's nice that they've got a couple of people at tackle now that you hope are going to be healthy. And it's not as glaring a need as it was this past year when you went in with Mekhi Becton and Brown, who were, to think that you were ever going to get a full season out of both of those guys, never mind one of those guys, was a long shot. Offensive line is still the number one concern. And if the Jets pass on that in the first round, simply to draft a really good receiver or Brock Bowers as the tight end, I think that they are making a huge mistake, and one that very well could derail their season. That's how important I think it is. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Coming up, we'll get some more phone calls involved. Coming up, we'll talk more about the Jets, because Woody Johnson had some big comments this week, which got some attention, but I don't think nearly enough. So we'll get into what those comments mean to me next on the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN, New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
York 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. Talking about the Jets after their move for Hassan Reddick, and I don't know what other way to put it. Every time the Jets make a move, I open up Twitter, and maybe it's just the nature of what Twitter has become. But Joe Douglas is this. He's amazing. He's incredible, guys. He's into what, year six here, and we're still waiting for a playoff berth. And don't you have to, if you go and you see a movie, right, and it's a big director, or you go see a movie, and it's a terrible movie, terrible, and then you go see the movie by that same director again, terrible, and a third time, terrible, fourth time, terrible. Are you going to go thinking into that fifth movie? Well, this is really, I saw the previews. This is going to be amazing. This is going to be an incredible movie. Like, don't you have to go in with some skepticism? Isn't there any nuance in the world left? Or do you think that just being a fan is just pom-poms? Yeah! This is it. He's done it. I like all of these moves. Or did you like all the previous moves too? Yeah! But the previous moves didn't work out, and he made all the previous moves. Doesn't matter! Win now! This is the year! I wish I could be that blindly in love with anything anymore. I don't know. I just judge it by life experience. And if somebody is continuing to make moves and they continue not to work year after year after year, I don't know. I think that the best I could do is I hope it turns out, but I'm a little leery based on history, based on experience, based on life, based on life, based on living life. But the Joe Douglas Kool-Aid Brigade, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know. If this year doesn't work, I don't know what the Joe Douglas Kool-Aid Brigade is going to do. We got Mike Williams. We got... Yeah, I get it. And I do like some of the moves, but you have to have a skosh, just a smidge, just a pinch of skepticism. No? Apparently not. Apparently you just you ignore everything that's taken place, and you just focus on what the next thing is and just be wildly optimistic. What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? Just blindly follow blind faith. That's what you need to have. Everybody knows blind faith is the only good faith you can have. Just have blind faith that this time it's going to work. History is meaningless. You don't need to learn from history. No. Ignore history. That's what you do. You just ignore history, especially when it involves the people who are still making the decision, and just hope for the best. Everybody knows that is a very good plan for the future, right? This stock is down 30% in the last week. It doesn't matter. Just buy more of it. It'll all work out. It'll all be good. So the other story with the Jets this week was Woody Johnson came out and spoke publicly. I'm not talking about that report from NFL Network, which seems like they had issues from the jump. But Woody came out this week and had some very telling comments about Zach Wilson. Now, look, I will preface it by saying that this is lying season, right? We're less than a month away from the draft. You hear all these different reports. This team likes this. This team saying that. But you don't know what to really believe. Now, this was not a report that Woody Johnson said. He actually said it. But I would assume that sometimes you put things out there to kind of sway things in your favor, right? So you go out there and you say things like, if we can't trade Zach Wilson, we're not going to cut him. I guess is a way to make it clear to teams that they're going to have to give up at least something to get Zach Wilson. If there is any interest in Zach Wilson, which it doesn't seem like there is. It's like when you're at the garage sale. You don't want to give away the thing for $2. And the guy thinks, well, if he doesn't sell it, he's just going to throw it in the garbage. I'll get it for free. Maybe people think they're going to get Zach Wilson for free when the Jets eventually cut him. Woody Johnson's going, I don't know what the mindset is of the Jets. Who could go down that rabbit hole? I'm not sure. But I will say this. I will go on record as saying this. Not even the Jets. Very rarely do I ever say this, because with the Jets, you just never know. You just never know. Not even the Jets can allow Zach Wilson to be on the roster next year. Not even the Mets. You cannot possibly do this again. It was a mistake this past year, a mistake that cost you dearly. You can clearly... I mean, one of the first moves that the Jets went out and made was to finally get a legitimate backup quarterback. Another one making up for the mistake of Joe Douglas. But I digress. Not even the Jets can do this. Now, the last time I said not even the Jets was in the second year of Adam Gase. It was clear to everybody that they were going to get rid of Adam Gase. There's no way. But then there was this little bit of a current of, well, you know, Joe Douglas he got hired by Adam Gase, so maybe he would be reluctant to fire Adam Gase. And I said back then, no, not even the Jets would keep Adam Gase beyond this year. Not even the Jets. So I will go back on record, break glass in case of an emergency. This is an emergency. Not even the Jets can keep Zach Wilson. I don't know if it's going to be a trade. I've maintained for a while, if there was a team that was smart, they would call up the Jets and basically buy a draft pick by taking Zach Wilson. Tell the Jets, we'll take Wilson, we'll pay all his money, but give us your third-round pick next year. Problem is, the Jets now no longer have their third-round pick next year. Maybe you can get something else, right? Because this is all in this year. This is what all in looks like. Trading away future draft picks to solve the problems of now, that's what it looks like. But I don't think that any team is going to make that trade. So maybe it is that they end up cutting Zach Wilson, which would be a bad move because you just have to eat all that money. I think that's a wasted opportunity by a team that knows that it's not going to be going to the playoffs next year. Or it's just starting the rebuild. Here's a smart chance to maybe, I don't know, go get a fourth-round pick from the Jets. Why not? At least they get rid of Zach Wilson and they can remove that as a topic of conversation. But I will say this. I don't know how it's going to turn out. But not even the Jets. Not even the Jets can keep this guy for another year. There's no chance. But it is kind of enlightening in one way, is that remember when the Jets drafted Wilson, and I don't know that it was right away, but shortly after that, when he started to struggle, there was this perception that the reason the Jets drafted him was because of the relationship with Woody Johnson, that the reason why they kept protecting him was because of the owner. Comments like that is like, we're not gonna cut this guy. We're gonna keep him on the roster. That makes it kind of, to me, makes me believe more than likely that yeah, maybe it was on Woody Johnson. Maybe to a certain degree we owe Joe Douglas a little bit of an apology for drafting Zach Wilson, because maybe the owner had more to do with it than I was ready to believe. Because in the off chance, and again, I think that the chances are, they have to be matching Mr. Blutowski's grade point average of 0.0. In the off chance that Zach Wilson is back here next year, you will have your answer for why that is. If he is on the roster next year, it's clear that is not a decision of the GM. And it's certainly not the head coach. I think we can all agree on that. If Zach Wilson is on the team next year, it's clear he is being protected by the owner. And that is all 100% on Woody Johnson. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 1-800-919-3776. So coming up, we'll get more into the Jets, more into the Giants as well. Because I think while the Jets situation is still kind of hard to pin down what direction they're going to go, I think in this past week we've gotten a little bit more clarity on what's going to happen with the Giants, especially at the draft, so we'll get into that next. It is the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.
This is the Gordon Damer Show on 98.7 ESPN.
I just saw one replay of it, so I can't see if it was really all that close, but at least they did something, and that he did kind of respond, and Brett Beatty had a big pinch-hit three-run home run, so at least some life for the Mets. Now, I say life, they don't have any wins, they're still 0-2 on the season, but at least you saw something in the last couple of innings, and who knows? They've now lost 9 of 10 to the Brewers. Didn't know that. It's not a great way to start the season, but we shall see. Again, two games is not enough to... Again, if you're a Yankee fan and you're over the moon after two games, you got to slow down. And no reason for Met fans to be too depressed just yet. There's plenty of time to be depressed later on. But we've been talking about the Jets. I wanted to get into the Giants as well at 1-800-919-ESPN, the telephone number, because we're, as I said, draft is quickly approaching. And it feels like for a while, it's been very hard to kind of pin down what direction the Giants were going to go. It felt like when we first got into the offseason that maybe quarterback, and then there were reports about Daniel Jones, the Giants had buyer's remorse, and then you thought, oh, wow, at 6, they're definitely going to take a quarterback. But the draft season kind of has like a life of its own, right? Like the things that you think and mock drafts that happen right after the season, there's a lot of change between then and when the draft actually takes place. And now it certainly feels like that the Giants are not going to take a quarterback, at least in part because the main quarterbacks are all going to be gone. Like there's 4 quarterbacks that we're talking about, and it seems at least possible that all are off the board by the time the Giants pick at 6. Because the first 3, some variation of those top 3 are going to be gone. And then the 4th one, either being Drake May being the 4th one or J.J. McCarthy being the 4th one, that 5 spot and the Chargers, that feels like a very significant spot if the Vikings or if the Raiders or any of these teams, the Broncos, want to trade up. The Chargers seem like the most likely destination for a team to trade up, one pick ahead of the Giants. Now, I've said before, if I had to list all the different ways the Giants could go, the one that would be last on the list is trading away any future assets to get a quarterback. Now, if a quarterback dropped to them at 6, I still wouldn't be crazy about it because it feels like deja vu all over again. Picking a quarterback overvalued at the 6th pick in the draft, surrounding him with no weapons whatsoever, and then expecting him to succeed. Boy, I've never seen that movie before. So it feels like deja vu all over again. And I don't want to see them take a quarterback. I think if you're the Giants and you're smart, you realize remaking this offense is not a one-year proposition. We can't do it. You can't do it in 1 year. It's at the very least, a 2-year proposition. So you've already tried, and other teams have tried. And this is the way I approach drafting quarterbacks. I know it makes for a nice headline. This is an A-plus move. This is a B-plus move. This is an F move. It's not necessarily all about the individual player. It's based on what the situation is. So you've already tried drafting a quarterback, and maybe there was a way for Daniel Jones to turn out to be a franchise quarterback if the Giants had better infrastructure set up around him, a better offensive line, more weapons at wide receiver. Then maybe things might have worked out. But the last thing you can do is the same thing all over again, where you draft a quarterback and take a look at the skill position players that the Giants have right now. There's probably, I think the Patriots are probably worse, but at least it's a conversation. There's not many teams that are less set up for success on offense than the New York Giants. Think about all the things that they need. So I don't think that the Giants are drafting a quarterback at 6, mostly because the quarterbacks will be gone. And I think that you should be okay with that. Now, on draft night, maybe Giant fans will be upset. I'm not sure. But I think that grabbing a stud wide receiver with that pick, that you know this, all right, this is something that I know is going to work. And think it almost at this point with Joe Shane, he needs to start stacking some wins. See, it's easy for me to say, well, you don't have to take a quarterback now. Look at it as a two-year proposition. We don't know that it might not be a two-year proposition for Joe Shane. If they have another year next year like they had this past year, oh, my God. I can't imagine what the I can imagine what it's going to be like. I can imagine what it is going to be like because we've been down this road before. And think about it. Joe Shane, he's had two drafts, and there's not really been anything to write home about. Now, I like Thibodeau, and at times it does feel like he is a real foundational piece on that defense, and the defense overall feels a whole lot better now with Brian Burns and the pieces they have there. But he's had 8 picks in the first 3 rounds in 2 years, including 2 top 7 picks. And in an offensive league, it doesn't feel like they've solved really any issues on that side of the ball. Any issues on that side. They've taken 3 offensive linemen with those 8 picks. And it still doesn't feel like that's a secure position either. So I think that this, as I said before, sometimes what you want is not what is best for you. So if you're a Giant fan, and you have your heart set on, well, we have got to get a quarterback. We must get a quarterback this year. It's not what you want, but it might be I think it's probably the best thing for you, because any quarterback, if you use that pick, and especially if you trade picks to move up to get one, you're almost certainly setting yourself up for failure, because the success of that quarterback is going to be hampered by the fact that you have less resources to surround that guy with something of value. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Subi is in Midtown. Subi, what's going on, man?
Hey, Gordon, I was going to agree with you with the neighbor's pick, because usually I don't follow the pro days all that much because it's nonsense, especially for quarterbacks. But when I saw neighbor's pro day, it was off the wall. And I think at the end of the day, if they want to trade up for a quarterback, they can get it in the late first round, which is a Penix, like trade next year, second round and third round. I mean, they can be creative with this, especially because they have so many holes to fill. But the neighbor's situation, you just have to hope that he doesn't become a diva wide receiver like a Beckham or even a Tony, where he starts, you know, asking for the ball left and right. So that's the only situation with the wide receivers, is if they turn out to be a diva wide receiver. That's all I got to say.
All right, Subi. Well, look, I'll say this. If he turns out to be a diva, I don't know necessarily that Tony turned out to be a diva as much as he turned out to be a knucklehead. That was the problem with him. And generally, when you have a diva wide receiver, they only become a diva because they're uber productive. Like, I don't know of any... I'm trying to think of a diva wide receiver who didn't put up numbers. The Giants need somebody to put up numbers. And look, I'm not going to tell you that I'm some draft expert or I broke down his film. You're watching film? Well, I watch videos. Okay, so say you watch videos. People say they watch film to make it out like they're far more involved in the pro. We broke down the film. You're looking at your computer. You're watching YouTube like everybody else. Don't try to elevate yourself. You're not watching film. You're breaking out a projector and a screen. You're Mickey from Rocky in the basement eating the soup. No, I don't think so. So I'm not going to tell you that I know what Malik Nabers is going to be at the next level. Much like with quarterbacks, I think it kind of depends on the situation you get drafted into. But it's hard, and maybe it's because also he went to LSU. But it does kind of, you definitely get visions of Ja'Marr Chase to me and Malik Nabers. And if he is anywhere close to that kind of player, that kind of dynamic player, yeah, that's what you need. Now, I don't think you want to just go out there and avoid red flags if their player has one, right? Like, I don't know what the reason he would be a diva would be, but generally when you're talking about a diva, it's because the guy is super productive and he wants the ball and he knows what he can do with it. And it's been a hot minute since the Giants have had somebody like that at receiver. And I'm approaching it from, if I were the Giants, of what do I know is going to work? Like, I got to get players that I know, the safest bet, that are going to be really good players. And it feels like if the Giants are staying at 6 and the picks kind of go the way that we expect. Now, look, maybe Nabers is off the board at 5. I don't know. But if he is there, it feels like a very good chance that he might be there. That would probably be the best direction for the Giants to go. And in terms of drafting a quarterback later on, this group, it feels like, is only going to get one crack at it. Now, I'm willing to extend them beyond this year. I'm willing to not extend their contracts, but I'm saying I'm going into this as a two-year proposition, right? Because coming off this past year, I feel confident it's going to be better next year than this year. But I don't think that you can look at it as, well, if we take a quarter, because if you take a quarterback in the second round or you trade, it's kind of the same proposition, right? If you're trading back into the end of the first round to take a quarterback, well, that's the same thing as, now it's not as expensive, but you're trading away future resources for the now. And this group is only going to get one swing at it. Some very rare that you get to have more than one kick at the can trying to solve the quarterback problem. Joe Douglas got more than one kick, but I don't think that the Giants group is going to get more than one kick at the can. So I would be fine with them putting off the quarterback for this year and build out as much of the rest of the offense so that when next year rolls around, assuming that you've had a better year, you'll have those resources. All right, we now at least we have a wide receiver. We feel better about our offensive line. Maybe they draft a tight end somewhere or they draft a running back in one of the later rounds, and now they have some real pieces that whenever you find the quarterback, whenever you identify that guy, you can at least slip him in here and have a fair judgment of whether or not that kid can be what you hope he can be. Because whoever that person is, if you bring him into this, if the Cardinals called you tomorrow and say, hey, we'll trade you Caleb Williams for your number one this year and your number one next year. Caleb Williams, who's clearly going to be the first pick in the draft, he would not, I don't think, be able to succeed. He certainly wouldn't be the best version of himself surrounded with whatever you're going to be surrounding him with on this Giants team. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 1-800-919-3776. Coming up, more of your phone calls as we take you up until 5:30. It is the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN New York. I don't know where Jonathan in L.A. is getting his info. Maybe it's a different lineup in L.A. Maybe there's some sort of transfer. But no, Cabrera is in the lineup today. Cabrera is playing third base and hitting eighth. So the Yankee lineup, Torres, Glaber's still in there again, despite the hit-by-pitch last night. He's leading off. Soto, too, Judge is the DH, hitting third. Rizzo's at first. Verdugo is in the five hole. Stanton gets the day off against the righty because Judge is getting the start at DH. And because they want to get Trent Grisham in there to play a little center field, which I have no... I would think that one of the main priorities is keeping Stanton and Judge healthy over the long haul. So giving Judge a little... I know it's the third day of the season, but I don't have a problem with that so much. Cabrera's still in there. Verdugo's in the five hole. Volpe is six. Wells is behind the plate hitting seventh for Stroman. And then Cabrera and Grisham. So there is your Yankee starting lineup. Know what Jonathan's doing, trying to spread misinformation on my show, but there you go. That's the Yankee lineup. It's also now time for...
It's Impossible.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Full of hijinks.
And look, I'm not your friend, so I'm not your friend. I'm your enemy.
And educational.
You sound like you're a moron.
It's What I Learned on TikTok, starring Gordon Damer.
Yes, it is. It is that time, ladies and gentlemen. It's not really starring me. It's starring the other people that are instrumental in putting the show together and put it on the air. That's really who's the star. And today, it's Chantel, it's Julian, and it's What I Learned This Week on TikTok. In case you've never heard it before, very simple. I spend way too much time on that TikTok app, but it's because I learn interesting yet useless information. Like, I learned, actually, I don't know if I learned it on TikTok. Ernie Hudson, the actor Ernie Hudson, is 78 years old. Have you seen what Ernie Hudson? He looks jacked. He's incredible. I don't know. What snake juice is that guy drinking? Amazing shape for a 78-year-old. But I, as a 53-year-old man, learned way too much time. Spend way too much time on the TikTok app. I learned interesting but yet useless information, so we crafted this little segment to have a little fun. How it works? Very easy. Give you four pieces of information, and you get to see if you can spot what's true. Four pieces of information, three of them are completely false. I've made them up. But one of the pieces of information is a true fact, and it is something that I learned on TikTok. And every week I feel like, you know what? I think I've learned everything the internet has to offer me. But then the next week comes and I've learned something else. So here we go. Chantel, Julian, who is batting leadoff today?
That would be me.
All right, Chantel. Let's see which one is better for you. Yeah, I think this first one is better for you. Okay, here we go. Number one, while he is generally remembered for being morbidly obese at his death, at Elvis Presley's autopsy, he weighed only 242 pounds. Number two, Marie Antoinette had many wire fox terrier dogs in her time as Queen of France, including that she is the first documented person to use the dog name Fido. Number three, Diana Ross, who sang the song Ain't No Mountain High Enough, actually lost her husband to a mountain climbing accident. Or number four, during his 2008 Olympic run in which he won 8 gold medals, swimmer Michael Phelps ate 100 chicken nuggets, chicken McNuggets a day as part of his insane diet. So again, to recap, while generally considered being morbidly obese, Elvis only weighed 242 pounds at his autopsy. Marie Antoinette came up with the, or at least is the first documented person to use the dog name Fido. Number three, Diana Ross, who sang Ain't No Mountain High Enough, lost her husband to a mountain climbing accident. Or number four, during his 2008 Olympic run, Michael Phelps ate 100 chicken McNuggets a day as part of his diet.
All right. I think I'm ready.
Okay.
Okay, so first, we're automatically going to take out that Michael Phelps ate 100
okay.
chicken
all right.
McNuggets.
Knock it off. Right, I like it. Okay.
There's no way.
All right.
Elvis being 243 pounds, that's a big boy right there. I don't know.
Yeah, it did seem like maybe it was the jumpsuits. I don't want to push you anyway, but I hear you,
but that one sounds like the most the realest one. Diana Ross, I don't think she lost her husband in a mountain accident. That would be interesting. And then Marie Antoinette, I know she had dogs. Fido being the first one to name a dog Fido sounds insane because, like, how would you know?
Right.
So we're going to go with Elvis, I think
Elvis
was probably 300 pounds. But, yeah, we're going to go with Elvis.
Okay, you're going to lock in Elvis. All right. While generally remembered as being morbidly obese at his death, at his autopsy, Elvis only weighed 242 pounds. No, that is incorrect. He actually weighed... he was actually fat. I came up with that one because I saw some footage of Elvis recently. I was like, you know what? He doesn't look like he's in that bad of shape. So then I Googled it. I was like, no, he weighed 350 pounds. I think he had not like pooped in a month or so. He had a lot of. Elvis was only 42 when he died.
Wow.
That's how I came up with 242.
Okay.
He was only 42. Like, people think, he was like 48, he was 50. No, he's 42. What a waste.
Yeah,
how
you live your life, right?
Yeah, the more you learn, right? Yep. The more you know.
Okay.
All right, so we digress. Here we go. Marie Antoinette and Fido, Diana Ross in the mountain, or Michael Phelps and his chicken McNuggets.
All right, so now I'm going to go back to Michael Phelps.
Okay.
Even though I don't see how an Olympic athlete would eat McDonald's every day.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go with that one.
Lock it in.
Yep.
That is also incorrect. He did have an insane diet, but he did not eat 100 chicken McNuggets. Usain Bolt actually ate 100 chicken McNuggets a day. These guys, they burn a lot of calories because they're training.
Yeah,
but no, Michael Phelps did not have he ate a lot of pasta.
Mm-hmm. And pancakes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
He was much more in the carb, whereas Usain Bolt was much more about protein. So now you're down to two.
And I don't want to believe either of these.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe. That's the beauty of the game.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go with Marie Antoinette. Name was allegedly the first person to name her dog Fido.
All right, lock it in. I'm sorry, Chantel. That is incorrect. I think this is the first time you've ever gone 0 for 3. No, Diana Ross.
I've been going 0 for 3 for like
weeks. Well, you know, the good thing is that you have so many people that you're competing with who do a bad job. Harvey... Jacob has had some struggles. But yeah, the true fact here is Diana Ross, who sang the song Ain't No Mountain High Enough, actually lost her husband in a mountain climbing accident. That is unfortunate. We move on. All right, Julian, you're up next.
Yes.
Before I get myself into trouble. All right, here we go. Here's four for you. Again, rules still apply. One true fact, three lies. Number one... Dave Grohl and his family lived in the Grand Canyon for almost a year when he was a kid. Number two, koala bears are maybe the dumbest animal on the planet. If you put a plate of eucalyptus leaves in front of them, taken off the branch, they will not recognize them as food. Number three, there have only been 5 documented cases of babies being born in the London Underground, their subway system. One of them is Benedict Cumberbatch. Or number four, the state of Montana is the only state with an official state rap song. So again, to recap, number one, Dave Grohl, when he was a kid with his family, they lived in the Grand Canyon for almost a year. Number two, koala bears are so stupid, if you take eucalyptus leaves off the branch, they won't recognize them as food. Number three, there have only been 5 documented cases of babies being born in the London Underground, and one of them is Benedict Cumberbatch. Or number four, the state of Montana is the only state with an official state rap song.
Yeah. So, not to kind of ruin the point of the game, but I'm pretty sure I know this one. I'm pretty sure the correct answer is the koala bears.
You gonna lock it in? You that confident?
Yeah, I'll lock that in.
Yes, that is absolutely true. Koala bears are so stupid. Their brains are like smooth. You know how like the intelligence of someone, you can tell by how many folds they have in their brain? Koala bears' brains are like cue balls. They have no flaps, and they are really, really dumb. If you take the they only recognize it in the only form that they ever have it. So if you take the eucalyptus leaves off the branch, they don't even recognize it. They don't even like smell them they don't figure it out. They're really, really dumb.
Yeah, they're weird animals.
They are very weird animals.
Some more weird facts about them.
All right, yeah. Well, let's not go down. Yeah, I had some other ones about them, but let's just diseases and different things that they. All right, moving on. All right, so we're down to the last question. This time we flip it. We give you 3 truths, 1 lie. So now you're trying to spot the lie. And in case you're listening at home, Julian and Chantel get to team up on this one and see if they can figure it out. Okay, so here we go. I want to make sure I have this right. Yes, okay. Number one, lobsters communicate by peeing in each other's faces. Number two, Dwayne The Rock Johnson has launched his own shampoo line. Number three, there are 100,000 nuclear weapons in the world for each of Oppenheimer's Oscar nominations. Or number four, a good deal of the painter Jackson Pollock's popularity came from the CIA buying his art as part of a propaganda program during the Cold War. So again, to recap, lobsters communicate by peeing in each other's faces. Dwayne The Rock Johnson has launched his own shampoo line. Number three, there are 100,000 nuclear weapons in the world for each of Oppenheimer's Oscar nominations. Or a good deal, number four, a good deal of painter Jackson Pollock's popularity came from the CIA buying his art as part of a propaganda program during the Cold War.
Okay. We talked about it.
Okay.
Dwayne Johnson having a shampoo line is the funniest thing I've heard in a really long time.
Okay.
That can't be true.
So you're going to say that's the lie?
That's the lie.
Okay. Julian, are you on board or are you going to go in another direction?
I'm going to go in another direction.
Okay.
I'm going to take the Oppenheimer nuclear weapons.
Okay. Lock them in. I'll tell you, one of you is right, one of you is wrong. Julian is correct. Yeah, there are not 100. I think it's 1,000 nuclear weapons for each of Oppenheimer's Oscar nominations. But no, Dwayne The Rock. Can we talk about this? Is breaking with the game.
Would you buy his shampoo?
Dwayne The Rock Johnson has a shampoo line. I mean, what are we doing as a society? The man is bald.
Is it called Milk Dud?
I'm not sure what it's called. It has like some Hawaiian name. But he's advertised his shampoo line. And he's. It's not like something that he's doing secretly behind the scenes. No, his face is right. He's the spokesman.
She's bald.
What are we doing as a society?
But maybe
have we really
people...
lost our way with celebrity that much? We're buying a shampoo of a bald man?
Maybe they still have to wash their like scalp, so they still
well,
call
I'm sure
it
they
shampoo.
Do, but you don't need a specific shampoo.
Yeah, I would have thought one of the benefits of being bald is the
cost
savings.
You just let the water hit it, right? Or just use the same stuff you use on your face. Makes no sense whatsoever. But there you go, people. That is what I learned this week on TikTok. And now, because of this segment, you have learned it too. 1-800-919-ESPN is the telephone number. It is the Gordon Damer Show. It is 98.7 FM, ESPN New York.